What is up? Welcome to another edition of the Utilization Report Debrief. I am Marcus Grant, joined by Dwayne McFarland. And Dwayne, I mean, it's still busy season, but you and I were talking this morning because we have moved all of our Fantasy Life company communications to Slack, and you were having troubles with the Slack bot this morning is what it sounds like.
Slackbot is annoying to me, Marcus, and I love Slack. So let's just be clear. We are supporters of Slack here at Fantasy Life. But yeah, Slackbot. I thought you had a good equivalent to Slackbot.
Slackbot is the cousin to Clippy from the old Microsoft Word, assistant that would pop up and was like really smug and is like, you look like you're struggling. Do you need help with that? Like, well, not from you.
And Slackbot, he's real persistent, you know? So you can tell him no so many times and he will keep asking you if you want him to do something until you just kind of got to shut him down. So I do admire his persistence and his willingness to continue. You know what? Look, if you don't swing, you don't get a hit. And Slackbot definitely takes his swings.
Takes his swings for sure. But we love Slack here. It is a very useful tool. And I immediately saw as soon as I jumped over there that there was already lively conversation in the Fantasy Life team Slack channel. So looking forward to that. Anyway, what we're also looking forward to is diving into Dwayne's top 150 rankings update that will be live on Fantasy Life really, really soon. Maybe by the time you listen to this podcast, who knows? But we're talking mostly today about the guys who have moved a lot based on what we have seen so far through this free agency period. So we go with the top 24 going from the smallest change to the largest change, the guys who moved the least in the rankings to the guys who had huge moves, who packed up the U-Haul and, trucked to a new neighborhood, if you will, in the rankings. So just real quick, was there any, obviously you have a methodology to this. I mean, your thoughts on what you've seen so far in free agency.
Yeah, well, we knew with the running back class, like we thought maybe we'd get this last year, but then most of those guys ended up re-signing, they got a new deal, or they got they were put on the franchise tag. So we didn't get all those moves. But this year, like all of those guys that we thought would maybe move last year and really none of them did, they all moved and they moved so quickly. We talked about this a little bit last week. If folks haven't heard it, when me, you, and Ian Harditz broke this down, the first day of free agency, I felt like we already had 2 years worth of information. But it's been a while, Marcus, like overall, and I feel like I've said this about a few things here recently, but I really do feel like a lot of times free agency is like kind of nothing, and this year there are a lot of significant moves. We had some quarterback changes, so there were a lot of impact. So overall, I would say my biggest takeaway is this is the largest list I can remember creating of substantial movers. And like to kind of qualify it, we didn't just make it, oh, a player moved, because you could have been ranked like 150 and moved to 130. Well, you're divided by where you started. If you started at 150 and you moved 20 spots to 130, well, that's very similar to, well, what if a player just moved 5 spots, but they were ranked really highly? So we kind of try to normalize for all that. And once you did that, I was like, wow, we have a lot of guys that moved 20% plus versus where they were in my first rankings, which came out in the middle of February.
Well, let's dive in. Start at number 24. We'll work our way to one. And at number 24 is Justin Jefferson. And for the first time in his career, his professional career at least, he will not be catching passes from Kirk Cousins as of this moment. It looks like Sam Darnold's going to be the quarterback, but we await the draft and see what happens there, what the Vikings possibly will do there. But for you, did that mean a big change in Justin Jefferson's ranking?
Yeah, and so right off the bat, people are probably like, wow, you've got a 0% change guy listed in here. Well, the only reason is because we were already preparing. We were already bracing for this. Justin Jefferson was already ranked as my wide receiver 4 just on the chance that Kirk Cousins didn't return, and we didn't have to worry about that for CeeDee Lamb, for Ja'Marr Chase, for Tyreek Hill. We're pretty sure like their quarterbacks are all locked in. But we had this concern with Justin Jefferson. So he's not moving in my ranks, but if you look at him on underdog, he's dropped 25%. So that means he's dropped one wide receiver spot. He's now going pick 7 overall, though, 6 or 7. He's going after Bijan Robinson, just ahead of Breece Hall. So drafters are adjusting, but just really quickly on Justin Jefferson. If you look historically, at Sam Darnold, he's been a guy that's averaged right around, well, over the last 3 years, he's been at 196 yards per game. Okay. 271 is what Kirk Cousins has been at for the last 3 years. So that's a big difference. And then let's say, okay, great. They made a trade. They got the 23rd pick in the draft. Now they're going to, they're going to use their two picks. They're going to package those together, trade up and get a quarterback. And that could very likely be what the Vikings are trying to do. But even when we look at quarterbacks taken in the first 16 picks of the NFL draft, going back to 2011, those guys have averaged 211 yards. Let's say they make it into the top three, Marcus. 222 yards is the average for those rookies in their first season. Again, Kirk Cousins was at 271. So we're probably looking at a drop of 40 to 60 yards passing per game. And historically, for guys, even really good ones like Jefferson, that has meant a drop in 3 fantasy points per game. Okay, for guys like him. So just throwing it out there, we don't have to completely freak out, but I think Justin Jefferson's going to continue to probably move even a little bit more down the board.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about him going number 7, too. This is a, that's a significant drop from a guy who was the number 1 overall pick in a lot of fantasy leagues last year. So falling to 7, yes, he's still in the first round, but that is notable, without a doubt. The first tight end you have on this list is Evan Ingram. The shuffling of pass catchers there in Jacksonville meant that Calvin Ridley is out, Gabe Davis is in. And so for you, that meant really no change in Evan Ingram's status in his rankings.
Yeah, and he's another one where, honestly, Kyle Pitts got him because he moved up. We'll talk about Kyle Pitts here in a little bit. So Evan Ingram would have moved up a spot. But because Kyle Pitts moved too, he kind of had to stay where he was. But he's another guy where we thought that there was a good chance Calvin Ridley was going to leave as we got closer and closer to free agency. Early on, I think the speculation was, oh, no, he's going to resign. But then as we got closer and closer, like, they might not be able to get anything done here. And the big thing for Ingram is really simple. Last year, when the offense condensed down to really just being two main target earners, and at that time it was Ridley and Evan Ingram because we had Christian Kirk get injured, 19.2 fantasy points per game, Marcus, a 28% target share over the final 5 contests. So I think Evan Ingram's a guy that showed us early in his career. He was really good, kind of got stuck in a super bad situation, probably wasn't that motivated for a bit with the Giants, came over to Jacksonville, and it's been much better for him there. And last year, he really got it going with Trevor Lawrence. So yeah, I'm not having to move him here, but he's another guy where we're already kind of counting on Calvin Ridley leaving. So I do think he's squarely locked into the top 8 tight ends.
Yeah, look, it's been really fun to sort of watch his career blossom in Jacksonville after we had so many expectations for him in New York that just never came true. But he has found some life down there with the Jaguars. Meanwhile, out here where I am in Los Angeles, Justin Herbert kind of seems to be tumbling because, you know, first off, they hire Jim Harbaugh. They bring in Greg Roman. Everybody's worried, are they going to run the football a ton? They let go of Mike Williams. They trade Keenan Allen. And Dwayne, I look at it, I immediately think of Justin Herbert. It's like that Will Smith meme, right, from The Fresh Prince, where he's just in the empty room kind of looking around. That's how I feel about Justin Herbert right now. He takes another tumble in your rankings because of that, I presume.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Williams gone. You mentioned it. Keenan Allen gone. They bring in Will Disley and Hayden Hurst, going to go with the multiple tight end sets. Sign Gus Edwards, a pounder between the tackles. Austin Eckler, former pass catching back, now gone with the Commanders. These are bad things for Justin Herbert. They're going to throw the ball far less than he ever has in his NFL career. That's a guarantee. And even when he is throwing, like, what weapons does he have? We've got Josh Palmer. We've got Quentin Johnston, you know. Not great seasons really from either one of those guys last year. Maybe one of them can come through, but I think the thing we can all agree on is those are downgrades from Mike Williams and Keenan. Keenan Allen had a 32% target share last year. So I think we know that he is pretty much open all the time. He's like a 7-11. So when you put all these factors together, you know, including the past, like you mentioned with Harbaugh, it's just too much. We've got to move Herbert down. Now, I was already below consensus on Herbert because I was kind of worried about, again, it's going to be the last time I say this, guys, but I was worried about these things happening. So I was already lower than consensus, but now I'm down to QB 15. He was at QB 14 in my ranking. So that's a -7% move for Justin Herbert, but he was still in the top 12 and most rankings across fantasy. So I was already below that heading into these moves.
Yeah, so Herbert, I think a lot of questions around Herbert. I was definitely concerned with the Harbaugh-Roman pairing that they were going to run the football, and all the moves, as you mentioned, suggest that they really do want to establish the run this year in Los Angeles. Number 21 on this list, it is our first positive mover. It's George Pickens who moves up. The Steelers, look, I have no idea what offensively it's going to be overall, but I will tell you that they went from a quarterback room that was Kenny Pickett and Mitch Trubisky to one that is now Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, and they are doing it for a bare minimum of cost. And if nothing else, that for real football terms seems like a win. For George Pickens, it seems like a win just because it seems like he's going to get more quality targets this year. Throwing the fact Deontay Johnson's gone, Dwayne, and this feels like I understand why the arrow is pointing up on Pickens.
Yeah, Pickens moves from wide receiver 36 to 32. I actually thought he was going to move more than this, Marcus. But once I really dug into it, like, look, on the top level, it's great for him because Deontay Johnson's gone. Last year on snaps without Deontay Johnson on the field, he had a 26% target share. It was 20% when Deontay Johnson was out there with him. So we know that Pickens is going to get more targets. The other thing that was nice for Pickens is his route tree expanded when they didn't have Deontay Johnson on the field. It was like, oh, we don't have to have him just run go routes and back shoulder fades. We can put him on a slant. We can put him on a crosser. He's capable of doing those things. And then that led to more yards after the catch, and he wasn't so one-dimensional. So I think those are all positive things, but you mentioned it. Justin Fields and Russell Wilson. Not exactly inspiring. I think Justin Fields will eventually take over the job, but even Fields, like, he's never been a high-end passer, Marcus. So it's like, what's the ceiling? Even if George Pickens is the primary number one alpha on the team, I had a hard time finding a way just to push him into that wide receiver two territory. Now, if he made an absolutely huge jump in year three, we did see DJ Moore and Justin Fields make sweet music last year, but that took a huge target share for DJ Moore. So I don't think we can assume like that George Pickens would get to that level. I do think this is an upgrade, but I will say I thought he was going to move directly into wide receiver two territory. Instead, he's really still stuck in that mid-range wide receiver three. I definitely acknowledge there's some upside here for Pickens.
Yeah, but I also think this is an offense that they are going to run the ball as well. They've got Najee Arthur Harris. Smith. They've got
just
they've
say got it. Just Jim put it out Moore. There, Marcus.
They are. They're
going to Arthur Smith.
Arthur Smith. Well, there you go. Arthur Smith. They're going to run the football this year. They are. They're just going to run the football. Who knows what's going to happen? But you know, there is some positive there with George Pickens. Number 20, Will Levis. The Titans seem to be remaking their offense completely. Derrick Henry is gone. They bring in Calvin Ridley, which I think shocked a lot of us. I mean, Dwayne, I don't know if Will Levis really truly is a franchise quarterback, but at least for now, Tennessee seems to be putting in place a structure for him to prove whether or not he can be that franchise quarterback. And that alone, I think, should be reason for optimism.
Yeah, I think that's the key. So if Will Levis happens to be good, we're going to know this year, and that could be good for fantasy. You've got Calvin Ridley. You've got DeAndre Hopkins. You've got Treylon Burks, who's spent a first-round pick on. You can argue he's been a bust, but he's also been injured a lot. But as your third wide receiver, Treylon might still be able to give you something. We got Chig Okonkwo. That's an athletic tight end that you can scheme up. You add Tony Pollard to your backfield as a nice pass catcher. Tajay Spears did nice things. So, yeah, I think all the weapons are here now for Will Levis, and you've also got a change in your offensive coordinator to Brian Callahan. He's going to probably run more of a balanced offense, maybe not as pass-heavy as some of the units that we've seen in Cincinnati, but it definitely won't be as run-heavy as what we saw from Mike Vrabel. So I think overall, these are all positives for Will Levis. I think this moves him into that late round QB upside conversation, especially if you're playing best ball and you're just wanting to take a swing on your QB too late. There's lots of different ways that you could stack this up now with Ridley and Hopkins and these other guys. So I do like it. And I think with Levis, like the other nice thing just for the Titans is they're going to know like after this year, like is Will Levis good or do we need to draft another quarterback?
Yeah, I think that was. I mean, look, they went out a couple years ago. They drafted both Will Levis and Malik Willis, and they're, you know, it seems like Willis is sort of out of the mix now. But this is Levis's chance to prove that he can be the guy down there in this Tennessee offense. In Las Vegas, the Raiders say goodbye to Josh Jacobs, and everybody looks around and says, "Well, it must be Zamir White season." And then yesterday afternoon, Alexander Mattison signs with the Raiders, and everybody on fantasy Twitter says, well, it must be Zamir White season. Like Alexander Mattison signs and nobody changed their opinion. I mean, I don't know that Alexander Mattison is the reason he moved up, but he does move up a significant number of spots in your rankings.
Yeah, I mean, Alexander Mattison was terrible last year. There's really no other way to cut it. You know, he was gift wrapped the starting job. You know, they signed him to the 2-year deal. And by the end of the year, it wasn't just that he was really bad from an efficiency standpoint. Sometimes that can just be variance, but like the coaches just completely lost faith in Alexander Mattison. They turned over the backfield to Ty Chandler. So I don't, you know, I think this is about as good as you could have hoped for. If you look at the other running backs that were available, right? It's not like, you know, Aaron Jones or Saquon Barkley or any of those other guys landed here. It was Alexander Mattison. So we knew that the Raiders had to do something to add a little bit of depth. I wouldn't say that this is clear cut. Zamir White's just going to run away with it. Like he's got his own issues, but Last year in the games down the stretch without Josh Jacobs, averaged 15.5 fantasy points per contest. We know that, you know, head coach Antonio Pierce, he wants to run the ball. He's talked about stylistically, like he wants to have his team to have an attitude, and running the ball is a big part of that. So I think it's going to be, he's going to be one of these coaches, no matter what game script looks like, he's not going to let that completely dictate the way that he wants to run his offense and push him off the run game. So I think those are positives for Zamir White. The other thing working for him, Marcus, is just not a great class as far as the rookies. Okay, so I don't think we're going to see the Raiders pull the trigger on a running back in round two, maybe not even in round three. So that means the most competition Zamir White's probably getting is like a round four back. Now, they could take someone earlier, and that could really force more of a split here. But yeah, I think right now, odds on favorite are Zamir White starting off the season as the running back one for the Raiders. We've still got a little bit more to go, but positive so far. And yeah, he moved up from running back 36 to running back 42 in the ranks. So that was a 14% climb.
Yeah, I mean, look, he played well at the end of last season. You mentioned Antonio Pierce wants to run the football there. I still have a feeling that the Raiders may draft somebody, but I'm with you on that. Yeah. It may not be a day two guy, so that should give him a little more wiggle room to try and wrestle that RB1 job away there in Las Vegas. Speaking of other running backs, DeAndre Swift, he goes from Philadelphia to Chicago. You've got him moving up four spots. Now, I'm curious about this because I like DeAndre Swift. Obviously, he got pushed to oblivion last year in Philadelphia. Yeah. Now he goes to a place with a really potentially crowded backfield. I mean, I thought Rashawn Johnson did some good things at times last year. Khalil Herbert is still hanging around there. They have a bunch of pass catchers. I'm curious why you moved him up in your rankings.
It's the biggest thing is the tush push stuff. You know, they gave him $24 million for 3 years. I would say he's the most well-rounded back on the roster right now. Is DeAndre Swift a lock to dominate this backfield? No. But I think his skill set gives him the chance to do it. He is a guy that can handle 50 to 60% of the early down work and take all of the passing down duties. Now, last year, Roshan Johnson's a guy they wanted to work in on passing downs. Khalil Herbert was more exclusively on early downs. So those guys could still have roles there, and Roshan could really impress in preseason and carve out a role. But 3 years for $24 million, you know, and Ian does a great job of writing these up. You know, how much does this money really matter for these free agents? And I think a lot of it still just goes back to their skill set and what they've done in the past. But the data tells us, like, when you change teams, often like that signal that you had before can lessen. When you land here. So it's not a slam dunk by any means, but he does climb four spots. So that's a 15% increase. So he comes in as our number 18 out of 24 players here. But it's just mostly about that dual threat skill set, Marcus. So I think there's a decent chance he ends up getting like 50% of the work, right? And the other two guys have to split the rest. I mean, he's been a very efficient back over his career. Last year, it was just a really bad run out with Hurts stealing the touchdowns. And they gave Kenneth Gainwell, who's an exceptionally good passing down back, and I don't think you have anyone the equivalent of Gainwell here in Chicago. Gainwell took all the 2 minute offense. Like, I would put Swift as the odds on favorite to take the 2 minute offense here.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember last preseason. In fact, I think we were all doing the Kings Classic draft, and Fields threw a little screen pass to Khalil Herbert, and he took it the distance, and the whole room was like, "He can catch the ball. They're gonna throw the ball to Khalil Herbert." And it feels like that.
I think the next pass was a screen pass to DJ Moore for.
Yeah. It also feels like the last time Khalil Herbert maybe caught a pass. I'm exaggerating, but it wasn't a lot. So we'll see how things shake out there in Chicago. I have said ever since Tyreek Hill left Kansas City that fantasy analysts have been contractually obligated to put another free agent or draft wide receiver in Kansas City. It was nice to see Rashee Rice sort of blossom as the season went along, but they go out and they get Marquise Brown from the Arizona Cardinals to pair with Rice and Travis Kelce. No surprise that he moves up a number of spots there. And look, I mean, it's hard to get an upgrade from Kyler Murray, Dwayne, but I mean, Marquise Brown did that. He went from, you know, a good quarterback to arguably the top quarterback in the game. I think there's no reason to not be excited about Marquise Brown.
Yeah, I think you gave a good summary overall. And yes, we are contractually obligated to continue to forecast people going to the Chiefs. Probably won't stop, even though Marquise Brown is there. But yeah, he comes in as our number 17 out of these top 24 guys. He moves up from wide receiver 46 to wide receiver 38. So that's a 17% increase for Marquise Brown in my top 150. And if you look at it, it's like you said, like there's a bit of a target cap here because we've got Travis Kelce, we've got Rashee Rice, but this is a guy that theoretically can still stretch out the field. And like you mentioned, that's been the element they've been missing. They've been missing since Tyreek Hill left. They tried to fill that with Marquez Valdez-Scantling. The Chiefs found out what fantasy people already know. Dude, just because a guy can run deep routes doesn't mean he's going to suddenly earn targets. You also have to be good. Well, Marquise Brown has proven that he can be good in that capacity. I think the real question is, based on all the injuries he's had over the last 2 years, like, is that still in there? I mean, on one hand, you could say, well, he's been injured. It probably is. Like, a guy at his age is not just going to suddenly not be fast anymore or can't get deep. But on the other side, you could be like, well, have the injuries added up, right? Have they compiled now to a spot where, you know, maybe Marquise isn't quite what he was when he came out, you know, from the University of Oklahoma when he was drafted several years back by the Ravens. So I think that this is a nice spot for Brown. I've got him at, like I said, that wide receiver 38. So he's a borderline wide receiver 3, but there's definitely upside. And if for some reason, I mean, Kelsey's getting a little old here, Marcus, mm-hmm. if Kelsey takes a step back, if Kelsey suffers an injury and he doesn't get to play as much, Rashee Rice was very, you know, I don't want to say completely dependent, but he was pretty dependent on all these schemed up looks right around the line of scrimmage. He could certainly take a step forward because, you know, he's still a young player. But I mean, there are ranges of outcomes here where Marquise Brown ends up as the wide receiver, is the top earning target, you know, for the Kansas City Chiefs next year. And you mentioned with a guy like Patrick Mahomes throwing in the ball, that would immediately mean he'd be a wide receiver 1. He's shown enough from a talent profile standpoint, getting to play with Patrick Mahomes, he would be a wide receiver 1 in fantasy. So got him as that borderline wide receiver 3. Wouldn't surprise me if he finishes more like a wide receiver 2. And the perfect run out, he could still be a wide receiver 1. So he's a name that I think probably continues to push upwards in fantasy drafts as we move towards the summer.
You know, I'll tell you what. I mean, we've talked so much over the years about wide receivers who struggle to, you know, land with a decent quarterback. In his career, Marquise Brown has gone from Lamar Jackson to Kyler Murray to Patrick Mahomes. I mean, that is that's pretty good. That's nice work if you can get it.
you know? Compared to what Allen Robinson had to live with all those years. DJ Moore, you know, yeah.
Right, yeah. So that's not a bad run for Marquise Brown. Number 16 is Calvin Ridley. And you mentioned it at the top that at the beginning of free agency, we thought that Calvin Ridley was probably going to come back to Jacksonville. Then after a while, it became apparent that he wasn't. We thought, you know, the Patriots were sort of in line there. There's some other teams that were in line there. And then, lo and behold, he signs to the Tennessee Titans. That, for you, is worthy of a downgrade. I sort of get it. I just want to hear you explain why you knocked him down a few spots.
Yeah, well, number one, we saw Ridley last year when he faced heavy target competition. He was really a wide receiver 3 and not necessarily a super dependable one, right? There were lots of ups and downs. Most of his fantasy production came late in the year after Christian Kirk was injured. Now, I wrote up Calvin Ridley in my free agency preview. Folks can check those out for free over at fantasylife.com, where I go through all these guys' talent profiles. And I talk about Ridley potentially really being, when you put age and everything together and his target earning ability, the best available receiver on the market. However, where he's never really shown us that he can be a stud is when he has faced other premium target competition. Was never able to do it really with Julio Jones until he left. Was not able to do it last year whenever you had Christian Kirk and Evan Ingram on the field together. And now you go to Tennessee. Yeah, DeAndre Hopkins getting old, Marcus, but 28% target share in the games where he was healthy last year. So Hopkins is still out there doing his thing. We talked about Treylon Burks. Yeah, not maybe the biggest threat in the world, but if they go to more 3 wide receiver sets, we also know target shares can go down as you spread it out and you get away from, you know, a lot of times if you've got a tight end and a fullback and a running back, well, no duh, you throw it to the wide receivers. They're the best options on the field. You got a blocking tight end out there and a fullback. Those aren't really options to throw the ball to. So you're going to get more targets in an offense like that. I think we could see a change in Tennessee this year. I mean, Brian Callahan comes from an offense that ran a lot of 3 wide receiver sets. This is a roster that now would make sense to run more 3 wide receiver sets. So there's just enough here. And then finally, the other factor. Yeah, we just talked about earlier, Will Levis. The Titans are going to find out what they have next year in Will Levis with these weapons. But the problem is we don't know for sure yet. What is Will Levis? Made some really great plays. I have a feeling he's going to be like one of Ian Harditz's new guys, like Drew Locke, Jameis Winston. Really fun to watch, a YOLO lifestyle out there, but it's often very inconsistent. So for me, Will Levis has got a lot of things he's got to clean up before we can look at him on a week-to-week basis and really feel great about him. So that's just enough questions for me that I'm like, you know, put him at the bottom range of that wide receiver 3 territory. You know, so I've got him right there with Marquise Brown. And right now, just thinking about this, like, you know, when you're going through all this, I'm like, I should probably just move Marquise Brown ahead of Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You talk about Will Levis, too. And it felt like last year, either it was bombs away or it was, you know, dump offs like at or behind the line of scrimmage. And there was really very little in between with Will Levis. We'll see now with some added weapons there if maybe he decides to target the intermediate part of the field every so often there. Moving to number 15, the only rookie that is on this list of our top 24 here, and that is Caleb Williams, the guy who was the presumptive number one overall pick to the Chicago Bears. And yeah, we talked about the Bears loading up, right? I mean, they already have DJ Moore. They go get Keenan Allen. They've got plenty of weapons. They still have a second pick in the first round. I don't know if you saw Daniel Jeremiah released his mock draft 3.0, and he mocked Rome Odunze at number 9 to the Bears. He said, you know, understanding that they have wide receivers, just sort of playing around with some things and giving Caleb Williams a Cincinnati Bengals like wide receiver trio with Moore, Allen, and Odunze there. I assume that is not why you moved him 3 spots to number 14, but I am curious, is it just the number of weapons that they currently have that allowed him to move up?
Well, if that happens, he'll move up again. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it. Williams right now, he's the odds-on favorite to be the first pick to the Bears, minus 3,500 over on DraftKings. So if you guys want to, you know, check that out, you can. But looking at Keenan Allen, I mean, yeah, he's an older guy, but he had a 32% target share last year in the games he played, Marcus. So, like, he clearly is a guy that can still come in, work from the slot. You know, he can beat linebackers, safeties. He's a mismatch. You've got DJ Moore, who really had the best year of his career last year with Justin Fields. And that's not to mention that you've got, you know, Cole Kmet, and you added Gerald Everett, another receiving tight end. And we already mentioned DeAndre Swift, who is a good pass catcher out of the backfield. So, yeah, it really just comes down to the fact that when you look at Caleb Williams, he's a very highly thought of prospect. And now he's looking at a potentially loaded offense. And if they get Rome Odunze on that team, Marcus, I dare say he's going to move up more. Right now, he moved from QB 17 to QB 14. So he jumped over Justin Herbert. I would actually take Caleb Williams. This feels weird. Right now, in a fantasy draft, I think he offers you more upside next year than Justin Herbert. Now, things could change. Maybe the Chargers draft Malik Nabers, you know, in the draft. So, you know, these things are fluid. But as of today, like, I would rather have Caleb Williams than Justin Herbert. So, yeah, it's a 21% climb for Caleb Williams in the ranks.
Yeah, as of today, I mean, presuming Williams goes to the Bears, he has a better wide receiver room than Justin Herbert does. I don't think there's any debate.
And he's going to run more.
He's going to run more.
He's not Jaden Daniels, but I won't be surprised at all if Caleb Williams runs for 450, 500 yards next year. Caleb's one of rushing touchdowns.
He's one of those guys that's sort of like Patrick Mahomes, that he runs effectively, right? Like, he's not, you know, it's not Jaden Daniels. It's not Lamar Jackson. He knows when to run. He runs effectively when he needs to. He also knows when to get out of bounds and get down to sort of protect himself. So it's kind of what you really like about a quarterback who can run like that. One of the weapons that Williams would have in Chicago is Cole Kmet. And Kmet was a nice piece, but Dwayne, Cole Kmet has a lot more competition for targets now in Chicago. And I think that's definitely going to impact him.
Yeah, we can keep this one simple. Look, Cole Kmet had really ascended over the last couple of years and became a tight end that, you know, we're looking at as being a low end tight end one. He could finish as a mid range tight end one. But a big part of it was he got these huge route participations. Well, that's probably gone now because you have Gerald Everett. And this is an offense where we've seen the offensive coordinator in the past really rotate, you know, these kind of tight ends. So I wonder now, like, is Cole Kmet really going to be more like a 60% route participation guy? And then even more important than that is the arrival of Keenan Allen, who's going to work in a lot of the same areas where Cole Kmet used to. And if I had to guess, Keenan Allen, 32% target share last year. Well, that's way better than Cole Kmet, so I'm going to put my chip on Keenan Allen earning way more of those targets whenever that is the type of read that is required from the young Caleb Williams. So, yeah, Cole Kmet drops from my tight end 14 in the ranks down to tight end 17, minus 21%.
All right, so he moves down. Meanwhile, Zach Moss at number 13, a pretty big mover in the positive direction. Makes sense, right? He leaves Indianapolis, where he was behind Jonathan Taylor. He goes to Cincinnati. That has an opening with Joe Mixon no longer there. And I think we talked about this last week with Ian. I mean, this just feels like a really great fit for both the Bengals and for Zach Moss. I mean, I think everybody's going to – I don't know, Dwayne. It feels like Zach Moss is going to be every fantasy analyst's favorite sleeper running back this year.
Well, hey, 5 years ago, fantasy analysts would have ranked this guy as someone you should be taking in rounds 4 or 5. Yeah. But I think as an industry, people have gotten a lot smarter. We do way more drafts than we used to. And it can be a trap, right? This is the Mike Davis trap from a few years ago where Mike Davis went to Atlanta, right? And he was like, well, who do we give the carries to? Just give them all to Mike Davis. Like, so you want to be careful. You don't want to do that with Zach Moss. He's a very similar profile to Mike Davis. Like, over his career, he has not been an above average replacement running back. Last year he was, though. It was really the best year of his career. And early on, fantasy members, they won't forget this. Fantasy managers won't forget the fact that he gave 17.2 fantasy points per game in 6 contests where he eclipsed the 60% snap threshold. And most of those, obviously, Jonathan Taylor was not available. So Moss was really good when he was given the chance last year, and he lands in a nice spot. He lands on the Bengals. It's an offense that we want to take part in. I know it was a struggle bus last year, but most of that was attached to the calf injury early in the year for Justin Herbert. Then later, Joe Burrow. Then later in the year, you got the wrist injury, and that really hurt things. So looking at it now, though, if you think this is a 100% healthy, you know, Bengals squad moving into the season, like, you can squint and be like, you know, Zach Moss, 12 rushing touchdowns. I could see it happen. I wouldn't forget Chase Brown. Yep. Chase Brown really flashed. This dude, Chase Brown and Sidney Brown. Sidney Brown's his brother, who plays defensive back for the Eagles. He had a long touchdown. Those two guys, they made some really big plays down the stretch last year. So congratulations to those Brown brothers' parents. Some really good genetics going on there. Those guys are actually pretty fun to watch. So I can still see this being a 50-50 split, Marcus. I could also see Chase Brown just taking over this backfield at some point. If I had to project it right now, I think I would put Zach Moss as the lead. You know, I think he probably gets 55-50% of the work. Then you have, you know, Chase Brown working in 35-40%, you know, something like that. But right now, like, look, he moved from running back 45 up to running back 34. So that's a 24% increase. So someone I'm definitely interested in. I just don't want that price to continue to rise too much. I think if it does, then we could start to get some warning flags and have to tell people to back off.
Well, and I also think the Chase Brown factor might keep it from rising too high, just because I get the feeling that's going to be a duo that we debate a lot this summer. Yes. How much of a role Chase Brown is going to have and what that's going to mean for Zach Moss. But man, a healthy Joe Burrow means a very potent Bengals offense, which certainly raises the ceiling on either of those running backs' potential when it comes to fantasy. Hey, folks, tournament time is officially here. So fill out your brackets and place your bets on who you think will rise to the top with my partners at DraftKings Sportsbook. Right now, all new customers who bet $5 will get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings app now and sign up using our code DEBRIEF. The crown is yours. Now, that's right. New customers can bet just $5 on anything and receive $150 in bonus bets instantly. Stay in the action and use your $150 in bonus bets on DraftKings same game parlays for a shot at an even bigger payout. Combine multiple bets together from the same game, including total points scored, number of rebounds by your favorite player, and more. Now, if sports betting is not yet available in your state, no worries. You can still join in on all the fun with DraftKings daily fantasy and have the shot to win cash prizes. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. New customers, use our promo code DEBRIEF and bet just $5 on any wager and get $150 in bonus bets instantly. That's promo code DEBRIEF only at DraftKings Sportsbook. All right, so we are halfway through our list of the top 24 movers in Dwayne's updated top 150 rankings. You can find that whole article coming very soon over at fantasylife.com. By the way, if you haven't yet signed up for the newsletter, it is still coming to your inbox for the low, low price of free every single day. So be sure to check that out. Number 12. Derrick Henry, and I think we said this last week. It happened right at the end of our live show that we did. Very rarely does it happen that we all, as fantasy analysts, are wishing and pining and hoping for a thing, and that thing actually happens. We got it with Derrick Henry. So he moves from Tennessee to Baltimore, and accordingly, he moves up 4 spots in your rankings, right?
Yeah, this is a great landing spot. Like, this is the opposite of, like, what the worst landing spot would have looked like for Henry, which would be landing on a team where we don't really like the offense. He's going to have competition for early down work. Like, you look at this, We've got a good offense. We all know that with the Ravens. You get the advantage of playing with Lamar Jackson, which opposing defenses have to account for. We've just seen some amazing yards per carry from guys like even Gus Edwards, right, over the previous seasons. And now you put a guy like Derrick Henry, even though he's taking a little bit of a step back, Marcus, heading into this age 30 season, he's still been better than the NFL averages for most running back ones. Whenever you look at his efficiency, whether that's yards after contact, explosive rush rate, all those sort of things, he's been running back one, running back two material, even last year at a lesser version of himself. Now you look at the landing spot, and it's like, okay, who else is getting the ball right now? I mean, Gus Edwards left. J.K. Dobbins is probably not going to be back. He's free. Justice Hill is really more of a receiving type back. Keaton Mitchell suffered a late season ACL injury. It's going to take him a while to get back on the field. Like, I feel like out of the gate, now again, they could add someone else. They could draft someone in the draft. But I feel like right now with Derrick Henry, you know, 2 years, $16 million, they're going to be just fine wearing him out. It's not like they gave him huge money on a long-term deal. I think it's going to be one of those deals like, hey, man, let's go out in the ball of flames. And I think Henry probably agrees. He wants to go win. He wants to get to a Super Bowl. So I think this is a great spot for Derrick Henry, because what's his biggest weakness? Oh, he's not great in the passing game. Well, the Ravens, they always rotate guys. They weren't going to use him in the passing game anyway. But early downs, I would say early in the year, Marcus, like, is there a way he doesn't get at least 60, 65% of the early down work? For the running backs, obviously Lamar Jackson's going to be involved, but right now, looking at this depth chart, I don't see anyone else.
I mean, the greatest trick the Ravens ever pulled was convincing us every year that they were going to throw the football to the running back. You know, every single offseason, it felt like, yeah, this is the year we're going to get them involved. And you know, I think after a while we stopped falling for it, but you know, they didn't mean they won't tell us that lie. At least with Derrick Henry, we know that's not going to be an option. They're just going to give him the ball and let him do what he does, which is run straight ahead and you know, run over some smaller guys every once in a while.
And Lamar is not like Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts in the way that those two guys steal the rushing touchdowns. Lamar steals carries, and occasionally he will snipe a touchdown, but inside the five, he doesn't get near the same workload. And obviously, if you look at him, he's a different frame player. I mean, you know, Josh Allen, you look at Jalen Hurts, those are like fullbacks playing quarterback. Like, they can just pound away. The Ravens don't want to do that with Lamar. So I think there's huge touchdown upside here for Derrick Henry. Like, I'm talking 15 touchdowns. That's in his range of outcome. We're not going to predict that. But like, would it surprise me if we looked up at the end of the year, like, holy crap, Derrick Henry scored 15 rushing touchdowns? Wouldn't surprise me at all.
No, not at all. I mean, I do think the moment he signed, you saw a lot of people like 20 touchdowns incoming, which obviously a little bit of an exaggeration, but I think it shows the point of what we think his touchdown upside can be. Number 11 is Keenan Allen. I mean, we've talked about him going from LA to Chicago. You've mentioned, Dwayne, his 32% target share with the Chargers last year. He moves down five spots, and I presume it's because you don't think he's going to get a 32% target share in Chicago next year.
Yeah, I think there's really three factors here that drives this 25% decrease in the ranks for Keenan Allen. Number one is what you just said. I don't think he's going to get that same target share because DJ Moore is better than Mike Williams. DJ Moore is also healthy. Mike Williams missed a lot of last year. And we've got these other tight ends that are already there. We'll see what happens with someone like Romo Odunze. But that those things are going to hurt Keenan Allen. Now, he's still great. A 32% gives you a lot of cushion. I mean, you can come down to 26, 27%. You're still well within a wide receiver one range. But the way Keenan Allen scores fantasy points, he needs a ton of targets. He doesn't break a ton of long plays. So he has to really rely on the receptions to pile up. Now, the other components here are you're leaving the Chargers, who over the last 3 years have been the most pass-happy team in the NFL. We definitely think that the Bears are going to throw the ball more than they probably did last year. You're not going to have Justin Fields who turned a lot of those dropbacks into scrambles. You've got Luke Getsy out of there. So I think there's a changing of the guard with the way they're going to want to run this offense. Plus, they're going to invest this really early pick in Caleb Williams. But I don't think they're going to be as pass heavy as the Chargers. That was a very, very big extreme. The final thing is, as much as we like Caleb Williams and we think that he's a really good prospect, Justin Herbert had already proven to be a really good NFL quarterback. So there's a chance that this year that from a target competition, pass volume, and quality of targets from the quarterback, there's a real chance Keenan Allen takes a step back in all three of those areas. And he's getting a little bit older. So I think when you put all that together, I just want to be a little more cautious with him, Marcus. I had him at wide receiver 20. Now he's down to wide receiver 25. Still a guy I like. I just don't want to. I don't want to rank him in such a way that people are like, oh, every time I use Dwayne's ranks, I'm drafting Keenan Allen. I just want to be a little more careful.
No, and I think that's all very fair for a guy who's been incredibly productive. He's one of those guys, I say, he's a fantasy wide receiver that we start to take for granted. But there are some sort of extenuating circumstances this year, so I certainly understand preaching a little bit of caution about Keenan Allen in Chicago. Number 10 is Tyjae Spears. And this kind of hurts my heart a little bit because I liked Spears when he was drafted by Tennessee, understanding that he was going to play behind Derrick Henry, but also feeling like he could carve out his own role there. Once we all sort of agreed that Derrick Henry was not coming back to the Titans, there was hope for me that Spears could get a bit of a larger role. Now here comes Tony Pollard. And I mean, Dwayne, I don't understand this from a football standpoint because there's just so much duplication. But from a fantasy standpoint, it hurts because there's so much duplication that I think it naturally is going to take away from what Spears possibly could have done this year.
Yeah, it's a 25% drop for Spears in the ranks. Falls from running back 21 down to running back 28. And I thought, again, you encapsulated it really well. Like, there's all this duplication between what him and Tony Pollard can do. And then they go give Tony Pollard $24 million on 3 years. I know people look at that, that's not a ton. That's quite a bit for running backs. Yeah. That's quite a bit for what running backs get these days. So I think Pollard has to immediately be thought of as having the leg up. Could Spears still be the guy? Yeah. And there's runouts where Tony Pollard can't stay healthy. There's runouts where Tony Pollard is inefficient like he was last year. And that wasn't just, an outlier kind of season, and Tyjae Spears ends up taking over at some point. But at least to start the year, I think we have to look at this as being Tony Pollard's probably getting at least half the work, and best case scenario, we're hoping Spears gets the other half. But there are also scenarios where it's going to be tough for Spears to even get to 30% snap share. And if he does that, that's going to make it really difficult, obviously, for him to also score fantasy points. So just have to take a little more precaution here. I was really hoping the run out for Spears would be more like what Zamir White has had, really avoid all the big names and free agency. And then like, okay, maybe they take a round four guy in the draft. I think we could have felt really great about Tyjae Spears in that scenario. Now we've just got to have a little bit more caution. So yeah, he drops down the ranks 7 spots.
Yeah. Moving up to number 9, we got Curtis Samuel, who for a while had been plying his trade in Washington. Now he goes to Buffalo. And I felt like this move maybe didn't get as much fanfare as some of the other moves we had seen earlier in free agency. But I think when everybody stopped to look at it and think about it, everybody really likes what this potentially means. And for you, this was a huge move. 27% on Curtis Samuel. Love to hear you explain why you think this is a great move for Samuel and the Bills.
Yeah, up from wide receiver 71 to wide receiver 52. It's pretty straightforward. You know, for me, Samuel has been a borderline wide receiver 3. He's been a wide receiver 4, but a borderline wide receiver 3 with the Commanders. He flashed some things early in his career in Carolina. Ian did a really good of outlining those things. You guys can go check that out over on the website. And I just feel like when I look at him and I look at his talent profile, I know people are on Khalil Shakir, but like Curtis Samuel has done more than Khalil Shakir ever has. So if I had to make a bet today on who the next wide receiver on the team is after Stephon Diggs, I would put my chip on Curtis Samuel. So I know there's some duplication, right, of skill sets there between him and Khalil Shakir. But it's also interesting. We'll see. Does Khalil Shakir, jump outside now? And then this makes, Curtis Samuel play from the slot. I think the real key factor here, though, is like, what kind of offense will the Bills run this year? Because last year they got really run heavy towards the end of the year once Joe Brady took over. If that's the case, that could hurt Curtis Samuel. But if they really go back to their pass heavy ways of, okay, we've got Josh Allen, let's not overcomplicate things. We don't really have a banger between the tackles and James Cook. He's really more of a receiver. If we look at the skill set of all of our players, Dalton Kincaid, more of a receiving tight end, not a blocking tight end. Like, to me, logical coaching, logically using all your players the best way possible, and like just looking at the percentages of how you win football games would be more passing again for the Bills. But that would assume rational coaching. So I think that's the one potential pitfall here for Curtis Samuel. But yeah, jumps up to wide receiver 52 now. So and I think he can continue to climb a little bit from here. We'll see what the Bills do in the draft. But yeah, right now, if you can get him, as your 5th wide receiver on your fantasy teams, especially in best ball drafts, I think there's a lot to like there with a guy like Curtis Samuel, who also can line up in the backfield, give you running back snaps. He can catch screen passes. There's a lot of different ways that they could use Curtis Samuel.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of the thing we always liked about him, whether it was Carolina or Washington, the fact that he could sort of be this dual threat guy in the offense. It never necessarily turned into huge fantasy production, but maybe now he's in a better offense with a better quarterback. Maybe we can start to see some of that potential finally shine through for him. At number eight, Rashee Rice. We talked about Marquise Brown going to Kansas City. Rice had an outstanding first season there with the Chiefs, and he moves up a few spots. Is this because he has some additional help in Marquise Brown? Is that the reason you like him a little bit more? Actually, I say he moves down. My bad.
He moves down. He's not our number eight guy. So he drops from wide receiver 15 to 11. This is where the percentages come into play, right? Yes. That's not near as many spots as what we just talked about with Curtis Samuel, but still it's minus 27%. So those two guys are both at 27%. Curtis Samuel on the positive side, Rashee Rice on the negative side. And it's what you said. It's Marquise Brown coming to town. So there's just a little bit more competition for target share because MVS was zero competition. Justin Watson, zero competition. Sky Moore has been a complete bust. We know that Marquise Brown is a good wide receiver. He is graded out as a wide receiver two level talent almost every year of his career. He's even had a year where he looked more like a wide receiver one. So even if, you know, Marquise Brown isn't a wide receiver two level player on this team, he's still going to be much more competition than what we saw last year for Rashee Rice. Now, Rashee Rice, young player. You mentioned how well he played. 25% target share once he took over a full-time role, Marcus. So that was week 14 through the Super Bowl, averaged 16.6 fantasy points per game. So we still like him, just dropping him down from that wide receiver 11 spot to wide receiver 15. So more of that mid-range wide receiver two versus, you know, being a low-end wide receiver one.
All right, so Rashee Rice taking a little bit of a step back. Meanwhile, Gus Edwards, he goes coast to coast, a little cross-country bus trip for Gus, going from Baltimore to Los Angeles. I mean, we've talked about it, right? The Chargers, everything they have done suggests they want to run the football, and at least as of now, Gus Edwards is the RB1 there, Dwayne, so it seems natural that he's going to take a big jump in the rankings.
Yeah, this one, you know, he moves from running back 61 to running back 42. So that's a 31% increase. He's number seven on our list here, but it feels really fragile. But at the same time, it's like, okay, well, what else is left out there? You know, there's more moves coming. They're going to add someone else, but I'm like, okay, there's not a lot of free agents available that would really scare us if they signed here. Yeah, they could force a share with Gus Edwards. But my guess is, like, are the Chargers going to use a round two pick on a running back? It kind of feels that way right now because they've given us all the signals they want to run the ball. So I think this one's a little bit fragile, but at the same time, not as fragile as it would probably look in most years with a richer running back class. And think about it. At this time last year, all the potential really good running backs were still sitting out there, right? And it was like, well, they could get moved. They could get traded. Yeah. They weren't all locked in. There's not near the risk like there was. So Gus Edwards, is it a guy that gets us super excited? No, but he fits what they want to do. So yeah, he moves up to running back 42.
All right, so Gus Edwards moves up. Meanwhile, Austin Eckler leaves the Chargers and heads to the East Coast. He goes to Washington. I don't know how to feel about this, Dwayne, just because there seem to be so many unknowns in this Washington offense. But he did take a notable step down in your rankings, and I'm curious how you're feeling about Eckler with the Commanders.
Yeah, look, I could be wrong on this one, but like you just factor everything together. You know, Eckler, he is a good passing down back. Those kind of guys can overcome age. And I talked about that in my pre-draft or my pre-free agency process when I ranked all these guys. But I mean, land somewhere with a team that I think is going to probably want to use a committee. Brian Robinson Jr. doesn't have high draft capital, but he's been decent. He's been a guy that's played pretty well. Could Eckler overtake him? For sure. But I think if I had to try to pin it down and say the way it starts the year, Eckler's probably the passing down back, man. And he didn't get much money. Two-year deal for $8.4 million. I mean, that's like, I don't know. I kind of thought he might still be able to get a little bit more than that. I never want to doubt Austin Eckler. We know he's a beast. We know that he is an absolute, you know, he takes great care of his body. He's an ultimate competitor. He cares about fantasy. He's everything we want, like in a running back for, you know, fantasy football. He catches passes, which is the number one thing. So I think he still has a lot of outs, but it's an offense I don't have a ton of confidence in. I still don't know who the quarterback's going to be. I thought it was odd they just gave him away when he still could have at least been a backup that came in. And you know, you saw Sam Howell last year was better than you thought. And it was like, oh, you know, well, if our starter gets hurt for three games, Sam Howell's fine. They just gave him away. So now I'm like, okay, Marcus Mariota? Okay. That doesn't feel very good to me. So we're going to be dealing with a rookie quarterback. That's what all the signals tell us. And it's not going to be Caleb Williams. So I think there's a lot of risk here, you know, with Austin Eckler. So more of a mid-range running back three for me. I do acknowledge the guy has a lot of outs. It wouldn't blow me away if he was in the running back one conversation by the time we're at week eight.
I mean, I think the thing that works for him potentially is being in an offense that will probably be playing from behind, having to throw the football, and he'll get that 2-minute work. What could work against them is, you know, if they draft Jaden Daniels and Daniels decides to take off and scramble on some of those opportunities instead of throwing the ball. And so
and it feels like Jaden Daniels right now. That's what it feels like. It could end up being Drake May, right? Yeah. Or who knows, JJ McCarthy. Like, these boards are going wild now. But it feels like Jaden Daniels to me right now.
It really does. So we'll see. But it's so murky, you know. I looking at the Magic 8 Ball, and it's like, ask again later. I have no idea what's going to happen right there. I guess it's to number five, and that is Joe Mixon. And we talked about this last week. I mean, he went from a guy who looked like a prime cut candidate to all of a sudden he lands in Houston, where you know, I know you and I and Ian last week said that this is about the best case scenario for Joe Mixon. And the fact that there's really no stiff competition there, is that part of the reason he moves up so much in the rankings?
Yeah, the more I thought about this, the run out could not have gone better for Joe Mixon. You know, he's a guy that potentially was going to be cut in a loaded free agency class where he potentially would be a forgotten back that couldn't even like sniff a contract, kind of like Zeke was for a long time last year. I mean, this is similar crappy efficiency to Zeke, like, and it's been for years now for Joe Mixon. So he's not even a replacement level running back in the league, but because the Bengals were able to basically work out, you know, a pick for nothing, like a round 7 pick, I think is what the Texans gave up to go get Joe Mixon. But yeah, with Devin Singletary departing, and now you land on this offense with CJ Stroud, you got all these passing weapons that we like. We like the offensive coordinator, Bobby Slowick. I mean, you talk about, I mean, striking gold. That's what Joe Mixon did from a fantasy perspective. So he was previously running back 27. Now he's up to running back 18 in my rank. So a 33% increase as our number five biggest mover.
Oh, there we go. So now we're getting into the top four, some guys who really did do some moving here. We'll start number four with Josh Jacobs. He takes a move out of Las Vegas, and he takes a move from 15 into the top 10, 40% for Josh Jacobs, who, you know, I love Saquon in free agency, and him making a move to Philadelphia is a big deal. But Josh Jacobs might be the guy that I think had the most cachet, I think, with GMs and front office people when it came to free agency this year.
Yeah, Saquon didn't really move for me in the ranks, which is why we haven't talked about him. I like him. I think the landing spot was fine. But Jacobs was a guy that was my running back 15. Now he moves up to that running back 9 spot, like you mentioned. But again, it's kind of like the Joe Mixon thing. Although we had the expectation that maybe this could happen for Jacobs. I don't think we really thought that like all the things that would work out the way they did for Joe Mixon. But look, he leaves the Raiders, who have been, they can't figure out quarterback. I mean, it's the Raiders. They can't figure out anything. No moves are coherent. They don't weave together. It's very apparent. Like, there's not the fabric of a plan in the background. There's no underpinnings of, oh, we've got this figured out, guys. Just hold on. And we're going to reveal the plan. There's no plan. There's no plan. There is a coach that managed to motivate a locker room for half a season. Mm-hmm. Right. And all major hat tip to Antonio Pierce. That isn't a shot at him. It's nothing against him. This goes beyond Antonio Pierce and how they're going to, you know, make all of this work. Now, obviously, they made changes in the offseason, you know, sweeping changes across their organization. So maybe they can turn that around. But as of right now, there's not a huge plan for the Raiders. Well, Josh Jacobs gets out of that mess. Now he goes to the Packers, who look like they clearly did have a plan. They got Jordan Love stepping to the forefront, blowing up. They've got all these young wide receivers supporting him. They look like one of the better offenses to be a part of. And then they cut Aaron Jones. And Josh Jacobs is now the premier guy. They bring back A.J. Dillon. Who cares? A.J. Dillon has had plenty of time to prove anything. He gets a small deal. Look, A.J. Dillon's not been good. He hasn't been good at football. He hasn't been good at fantasy football. He's been good at neither. So Josh Jacobs is going to dominate this backfield. Like, he's going to absolutely dominate this backfield. He offers low-end running back one potential. Look, this is a guy, I get it. He's not – some people won't like him because they don't think, oh, well, he's got that hyper high end efficiency, but he is a guy that's proven multiple times capable of handling very large workloads, being able to play all downs. And those are the things that really matter the most. He's still got the first round pedigree. Now he's got the $48 million 4-year contract. We know their plan is to use him. He will have to completely faceplant in a way that's probably not even imaginable to lose this role. So even if he stinks as a player this year, he's going to be on an offense good enough that's going to make it pretty hard to, for him to fail unless he gets injured.
Right. And I think that's the big thing, is that the offensive upgrade around him. I mean, we saw last year what a healthy Aaron Jones was able to do. And now you get a guy who is younger and is very, you know, to talk about forced tackles, you know, missed tackles and broken tackles, that sort of thing. That's the thing that Josh Jacobs does well. So very curious to see how he works in Green Bay, but reason to be incredibly optimistic there. Number three, we are back in. Fourth year in a row, right? I was talking with someone the other day that, you know, insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. The thing with Kyle Pitts is that every year it's been slightly different, right? Like there's been a one little thing that changes, either quarterback change, or maybe he was hurt, or now there's a new head coach and a new quarterback. There's always been a reason for us to get back on Kyle Pitts. Dwayne, if it doesn't happen, if he doesn't have a big breakout, if he doesn't get back to kind of where he was trending as a rookie, then maybe it doesn't happen. But I think everybody is sort of like, we're back in. You got him going into the top six now all of a sudden. Like, there's reason to be excited about Kyle Pitts again.
Yeah, and I was higher than the industry already on Pitts just because I refuse to let go of the things that have the most signal for future fantasy points. And Pitts still has those. So if you look at his 3 years, Marcus, 21% targets per route run, 1.73 yards per route run. Those things really matter for fantasy football for tight ends. And those are mid-range tight end one worthy numbers. They tell us historically that that's what a middling tight end one looks like. But he's also got the athletic profile, which matters for tight ends, to be a guy like Vernon Davis that kind of everybody finally gave up and he just popped off for like a number one tight end overall season. I'm sure you remember because you're a big 49ers fan. Yep. You know the season I'm talking about. And Vernon did that like every other year after that. It was kind of like, oh man, Vernon Davis, number one tight end in fantasy. The next year he'd be tight end 14. I hate him. Next year he's tight end one again. So like Kyle Pitts also has that kind of athleticism. So I think once you really put it all together, I mean, he's only 23 years old right now. He'll almost be 24 when the season starts. But Kirk Cousins arriving and bringing 40 to 50 more yards passing per game, it's just too much to pass up. And the accuracy, so many of these targets for Kyle Pitts were uncatchable. Just so gross. So, yeah, he moves up 45%. He is my tight end six now.
So all Kyle Pitts needs is Mike Singletary to come out and just bench him in the middle of the game.
Yes.
You know, and go on a post-game rant about, you know, can't win with him, can't play with him, whatever. And then he's going to go off and be the tight end one. Who knows? Number two on our list, we stay in Atlanta. And as excited as everybody was about Kyle Pitts, I felt like there was even more excitement about what Drake London can be. I mean, I know you didn't have him quite as high, but people say maybe he's even a top 10 wide receiver. Nonetheless, a 48% move up for Drake London, because we just have that much excitement about Kirk Cousins and not Arthur Smith being in Atlanta right now.
Yeah, man. Wide receiver 27 moves up to wide receiver 14. So a very big move for Drake London. You know, Kirk Cousins averaged 271 yards per game over the last three seasons. The Falcons in the last 2 years have averaged 172 and 222 passing yards per game. So you are about to get a huge bump in the passing yards. Drake London, a 23% target share over his first 33 NFL games. That's well within that wide receiver two range historically for fantasy producers. So we've also got a change with Zach Robinson as the new offensive coordinator. Arthur Smith is out. There's just a lot to like here, Marcus. I know they added Darnell Mooney. They added Rondell Moore. I don't consider either one of those guys, based on what they've done so far in their career, to be huge target competition. I think they're nice complementary pieces. I really think this offense is all about London. It's all about Pitts. And I think that we could see something honestly similar to what we saw with Kirk Cousins. You know, I'm not saying Drake London is Justin Jefferson, but I mean, this is a pretty similar offense. It's a slight downgrade for Cousins, but overall, when you look at it across, like T.J. Hockenson, when he's healthy, we're like, give him nod slightly over Pitts. You know, Justin Jefferson, when he's fully healthy, yes, we'd give him the nod over Drake London. But then when you add in the other pieces, like this is pretty close to what Kirk Cousins had. So we just really need Cousins to be healthy. You know, we need that Achilles, which is on his push-off foot for when he throws. That cannot have any issues with where we've got a lot of these guys, you know, ranked. That's one of the reasons I didn't go ahead and push London even higher. But yeah, I've got him at a wide receiver 14, was wide receiver 27. I wouldn't necessarily disagree if someone wanted to get him into the top 12. I just feel like it's not so much about London at that point, Marcus. It's about the other names I have to move him past. It gets to the point where I'm like, okay, it's kind of a same tier thing, and I still really need to see this all come together for the Falcons. So is it necessary for me to go ahead and just push London past those other guys? And I don't think that it is. I think he's in the same tier with some of those other guys, but I feel really good. Again, like you said, this is still a huge move. This is an absolute huge move for London to move this far. We rarely get to see something like this for a wide receiver.
Well, and I think with your moves of Pitts and London, it sort of reinforces what we all have felt, right? That Kirk Cousins, we know who he is, and Kirk Cousins in fantasy is going to continue to be kind of the same guy he always has been. We're excited for what this means about the guys around him, for Pitts, for London, for Bijan Robinson, for all of those guys in that Atlanta offense that we have been drafting and hoping for better things. And now it looks like better things, at least theoretically, are on the way. So that gets us to number one on the movers list, and it is, sadly, Justin Fields. And I say sadly because he took a major, major tumble in the rankings. Not really a surprise. And look, he goes from Chicago, where he had been the starter, to Pittsburgh, where maybe he's the starter in week one, most likely not, potentially. Not really sure what the situation is going to be long term, but Dwayne, I mean, with that uncertainty there, there's no way that we can really count on him, at least at the start of the season in fantasy, and his ranking sort of reflects that.
Yeah, it's just uncertainty and doubt. What I don't understand is how can the Steelers come out and say, no, we've already told Russ he's the starter. I don't get it. Like, did they not watch the same Russell Wilson? Russell Wilson, who back in the day, Marcus, like, look, it was gold. It was gold. It was pure gold. His rainbow passes often found a pot of gold on the other end. That was called, the leprechaun was Tyler Lockett running around, you know, with the booty there. But now it's like, okay, defenses want to play that deep shell coverage. They're taking all those kind of throws away from Russ. Russ has shown us for 2 years in a row now, not really good at processing the intermediate areas of the field, especially if you want to run any sort of timing game. You know, it's all more of a see it and throw it kind of thing. Well, those are tougher throws to make, you know, underneath and in the short areas of the field. You make those passes outside of rhythm, and a lot of time that equals a turnover. So I think that Russ Wilson eventually gets taken over by Justin Fields. It's just a matter of when. I did intentionally keep Justin Fields in my top 150 because the talent is still there, Marcus. He is my number 150 player overall. Technically speaking, I could have moved him below that, but what I like to do with a lot of players at the end of the list is, like, we want to think about upside and what they have. And we know with Justin Fields, it's there. Only Lamar Jackson has averaged more than this guy rushing yards per game over the last 3 years. 55.5 per game for Justin Fields, 58.8 for Lamar Jackson. And honestly, like, he's still a closer comp to Lamar Jackson than he is, you know, a far off comp. So I feel like at some point he will take over that starting job. It's just tough for you to draft him right now and depend on him as being, okay, I'm going to go into the season, obviously, with him as my guy. But once you get to a range in your draft, especially if you're playing best ball and maybe you've already got, maybe you took a nice quarterback you already like and you waited quite a bit, like, Fields is a name that I would still be very comfortable pulling the trigger on because I know I've got to draft at least two quarterbacks. Every once in a while, you may draft three, but Fields fits that profile. It's just tough right now in redraft type formats with Fields. So yeah, he just had to take that big drop down from QB9 to QB22.
Yeah, I mean, not really a surprise there, but I'm sort of with you. And I think a lot of people feel this way, that he's going to start games at some point this season. It's more of a question of when and not an if in Pittsburgh for Justin Fields. So we will see how that sort of shakes out. But there you go. He is the guy who unfortunately takes the biggest move of anybody in the top 150. But of course, you can check out the entire rankings update over at Fantasy Life. That is up tomorrow? Today? Tomorrow?
Yep, it'll be up tomorrow. Yep. The ranks will be up by the time people hear this. And then the article will be up tomorrow morning. And obviously, it'll be in the newsletter.
There it is. So be sure to check that out over at fantasylife.com. Go sign up for the newsletter as well, so you can get a sneak preview of the whole thing there. So beefy show. Plenty of good stuff there. And look, I'm going to go out on a limb, Dwayne, and say this is not the last time these rankings are going to shift before the season kicks off. You know, there's still some guys out there to sign. There's obviously the draft to go through, so there's still time for things to change before we get to week one of the NFL season. But in the meantime, that's a good spot for us to pause and take a break. That'll do it for this edition of the Utilization Report Debrief. Shout out to James Lynch, as always, for putting this thing together. We appreciate all of you out there hanging out with us as well. For Dwayne McFarland, I am Marcus Grant. Enjoy the week, everybody. Enjoy studying the rankings and how they have been updated. In the meantime, we will talk to you again really, really soon.